We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Time now for the Brian Barrett Show on EEI.
The kick and the pitch. Swing. There's a drive to left center field. It's going to win it. Meadows goes over and makes the catch. Santana tags. Here he comes. And the throw is very wide and late. And the Red Sox have won the division series. A sacrifice fly by Kiki Hernandez, bringing home Danny Santana with a winning run. Red Sox walk it off 6-5. Actually, they run it off with Santana scoring. And Boston moves on to the American League Championship Series.
All right, that was, of course, Joe Castiglione on the call. That Kike bat toss was pretty sweet. And it was appropriate that Kike Hernandez actually ended the series because, of course, he had that one stretch, seven straight plate appearances with a hit. And, of course, he had two home runs in that series as well. Definitely the MVP of the series. They don't give those out in the divisional series, though. Let's now head out to the Harbor One Hotline. Joining us now from Sports Talk 790 in Houston, it is my friend Joe George. Joe, how are you, man?
Good, Brian. How are you? It's been a long time, but it's good to talk to you over the phone for sure.
Yeah, man. Well, you guys are enjoying your time in Houston there. Five consecutive championship series appearances for the Astros. Joe, I'm interested because, of course, we've talked about Alex Cora a lot. They rehired him after everything that went down. What's the perception of Cora in Houston?
You know, I think, honestly, I think there's some jealousy because I think even though Dusty Baker has warmed to the Astros fans, I think there's a lot of jealousy that the Boston Red Sox had the, I would say, the guts to bring Cora back. I think a lot of Astros fans really wish that A.J. Hinch was the manager of this team right now, and they would feel like he was the king of the world. People loved A.J. Hinch, and like I said, they love Dusty now. They're definitely growing on him, but I don't think there's a lot of hate for Cora. I think there's a lot of mixed feelings because it's weird when you look back at 2017 that team was so good, obviously, and they've continued to be good. But the question of cheating is always around this team. It came up in the White Sox series. It's coming up again now. So there's definitely some eerie feelings towards Alex Cora. But I think overall, honestly, I think most Astros fans do appreciate what he brought to the team. And I just think there's jealousy more than anything because he's the manager of the Red Sox and AJ's not the manager of the Astros now.
Yeah, I think it's funny, too, because, of course, people dislike the Astros because of the scandal. And people dislike the Red Sox because they've been winning a lot as of late and because Alex Cora is the manager. So I don't know who the rest of the country is going to cheer for in this particular series. But now you look at this. So five straight championship series, as I was mentioning, with the Astros. And with the cheating scandal, does it feel like, Joe, they need to get another World Series to kind of, I don't want to say vindicate themselves, but to prove what they were doing was right the whole time?
Well, you know, I mean, five straight ALCS appearances is impressive. I think it's the first team, I think it's like the 70s A's to go to five straight ALCS appearances. So that alone is impressive. And obviously they had the one appearance versus the Nationals, which they lost. I do think another World Series, especially if it works out in Houston's favor, and they were to play the Dodgers, you know, who they beat in 2017, if they beat them again this year, it would really validate what happened, you know, in 2017 as legit, especially when you look at, you know, George Springer is gone. Justin Verlander is not healthy. If they were to win a World Series again this year, I think it would really stop a lot of the critics because it just proves that this team, they didn't need to cheat. They cheated for whatever reason. We all know it. People in Houston, they understand what the Astros did. There's no blind eye to what happened in 2017. A World Series this year would really validate, you know, what the Astros did in 2017. even though I think in large part the fans, they feel pretty good about the team, of what they've accomplished over the last couple of years post the scandal. Because it's hard, you know, Brian, I think a lot of people, because it all came out in 2019, that people forget that there was so much success in between then and now that it feels like the scandal was in 2019, not in 2017. So I think that's the kind of the odd part. And beating Boston, who, you know, obviously Andrew Benintendi had that great catch in left field at Minute Maid, that diving catch, which was absolutely incredible. If you beat Boston and then you got the chance to beat the Dodgers, it would really validate what happened in 2017 as an Astros success. And this is a great baseball team.
We're chatting with Joe George from Sports Talk 790 on the Harbor One Hotline, covers the Astros. All right, so you mentioned Dusty Baker earlier and how some of the fan base would like A.J. Hinch. Now, with Cora here, there's a faith in him. He's 15-4. He's won 78% of his postseason games. Joe, have there been moments throughout the season or into the postseason where people are concerned about moves Dusty makes? Is that something that the Astros fans are concerned about entering the series against Cora?
Absolutely. And I think yesterday was a weird day because when they clinched the ALDS, that everyone saw McCullers leave after five. And you go, Dusty, what are you doing? And before the game, Dusty was asked by one of the Chicago reporters, I think it was Bruce Levine, about, you know, trusting your gut versus trusting analytics. And Yimi Garcia got hit pretty hard early in the series. And for him to go to Yimi right away after McCullers came out, everyone goes, what is going on here? Lance McCullers has pitched 73 pitches. He should be fine. Jose Urquidy, who would have started game four if there was not for the rainout, why is he not going in the game? What are they doing right now? I think there is a lot of concern.
Yeah, and
Dusty,
go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so this McCullers situation, though, now he's got tightness in his elbow. It's a guy that's had Tommy John. Obviously, he wasn't going to pitch in game one anyway, but he's not going to pitch in game two. How concerned are they that they're not going to have him?
I think they're concerned. You know, Lance, you know, we were on the field after the game, and Lance talked about how his routine was kind of messed up because he wasn't necessarily planning to pitch in that game. He was planning to pitch today, if anything, game five, if it was necessary. And maybe his workout routine when he was lifting weights caused, you know, that strain that he was feeling. So I think there's some concern, of course, but I think there's some hope that, you know, game three is going to roll around and McCullers is going to get on the mound for the Astros. So people are definitely concerned. Look, he has emerged as the ace of this staff. When you think about what's happened over the last couple of years, Garrett Cole leaves in free agency to go to the Yankees. Zach Greinke is kind of a shell of himself. Rough end of the season, COVID, and then an injury. But, you know, with JV being out, Lance McCullers has really emerged as the guy on the staff. And if he's not available, Astros fans should feel panicked. You know, he is a guy that he adds to his repertoire every single year. Lance has been awesome. He is a really good pitcher, and they got him long-term. If you don't have him in this series, I think that might be the difference maker, unfortunately, for the Astros.
All right, so Joe, we remember Urquidy and Garcia and Valdez. These guys, they have dominated the Red Sox this season, and you know the Astros have dominated the Red Sox. They're 5-2 against the Sox. All these guys have thrown gems. So is it just against the Red Sox, or have they been good all season long? I mean, the numbers look pretty good, but are they just pitching much better against the Red Sox than they pitch against other guys?
Well, you know, Fromber's been up and down this year. He's definitely, you know, gone back to more of what 2 years ago with the walk rate. Last year, he emerged as really a dominant pitcher, so he's kind of a wild card. He can be good any day. Urquidy and Garcia are tough because, you know, Garcia specifically, he has pitched way beyond anything he's ever done when it comes to innings in a total season. So I think it's hard to tell what you're going to get out of these guys. And my concern for Jose Urquidy is because he didn't pitch in game four, and he's not going to go probably till game two, it's going to be like a week and a half in between starts. And I just wonder personally, what is he going to look like going that far? Is it going to benefit him? Is it going to hurt him? And same for Luis Garcia, so much time off. It might benefit him, but I think there's just a question. These guys are, when they started coming up, you know, the last 2 years, these are Jeff Luhnow guys who, of course, is not with the Astros or in baseball at all. They were surprises, including Framber in a lot of ways. So I think there's some faith that they can get it done, and they've had success with the Red Sox. But and you guys know it. You know, Tampa had success versus the Red Sox this year, and it didn't matter in the playoffs. This lineup can mash, and if you don't have your ace stuff, you know, the Red Sox will get you for sure.
We're chatting with Joe George on the Harbaugh and Hunt line, covers the Astros for Sports Talk 790. He was just with the team as they clinched in Chicago. So obviously they made some moves at the deadline to add to that bullpen, Joe. How much of a strength of the team is that now?
It's definitely not the strength still. I would put it in that third spot. To me, it's the bats are clearly number one. I would put the rotation two and then the bullpen three. You know, Phil Maton has been okay at moments. He got some big outs yesterday. Same thing with Yimi Garcia. But Kendall Graveman, I know he was embroiled in some controversy because for some reason Tony La Russa thought in an ALDS game he would intentionally throw out Jose Abreu, which is a wild opinion in my mind. But, I mean, why would you do that? It's like when when the White Sox fans were cheering that they hit Jose Altuve early in the game, and then Altuve scored for the first run. I think it was a two RBI at bat for whoever was up. You don't hit guys on purpose in the playoffs. That's lunacy. So I would still say the bullpen is third. I think you feel really good about Ryan Pressly, Ryan Stanek. You know, James Click, who was in Tampa before, brought him to Houston. He's been monster at times. So if you get a good Graveman, but it can be a positive. But he was not the guy that the Astros traded for. He was a dominant pitcher in Seattle and just was not the same guy in Houston. So I think the bullpen is fine, but it's you can get them for sure. There's no confidence when any of these guys go in the game, honestly, besides Ryan Pressly. He's the only guy that I think anyone watching the Astros should feel fully confident about when he goes into the game.
And, Joe, you look at this lineup, outside of Maldonado, everybody hits. I mean, Alvarez, Altuve, and now you got Bregman back, and Correa's back to his playoff form, and Tucker's had an outstanding season. And you look at all these guys, and they've put up incredible numbers all season long. Is there anything that gives the group trouble at all, or is it just specific things with specific players? Like, have they gone through cold streaks at all this season based on the depth of this offense?
I mean, they've gone through crazy cold streaks. They've done things this year that I don't understand. They got swept by the Tigers. They got swept by the Orioles, the Rangers. They got swept by some of the worst teams in baseball this
season.
Sounds
like the Sox.
It makes no sense when you see it happen. I mean, look, Yuli Gurriel won the batting title this year, and he's batting seventh right now for Dusty Baker. So he had a bad start of the postseason. Altuve wasn't even at his best either until that last game. So they can be streaky. It's one of those things where I think you feel confident every day when Correa and Kyle Tucker go to the plate, but and definitely Altuve as well. But the other guys, even Alex Bregman, has gone through up and down stretches where it's not pretty at times. It just depends on how hot they are.
And, Joe, when we saw them play earlier this season, I don't know, I forget the exact number. I think it was like a million fastballs in a row they attacked Rafael Devers with. Now, eventually Devers started hitting fastballs again, but do you expect that to be the plan again in this series with these guys? Or without having a guy like McCullers, are they still going to go with that plan? Do they have guys that throw hard enough to be able to do that?
I don't know if they have guys that throw hard enough to do it. They'll try it. I mean, obviously, you know, you guys saw it too. You know, Nelson Cruz was a shell of himself this year, but you know, in that last series when the Astros played the Rays, it was fastball all day versus Nelson Cruz. So I think they definitely have confidence that they have guys in the rotation that can attack with the fastball. I think the one guy who does not get talked enough, probably across baseball, is Brent Strom. He's the pitching coach for the Astros. He's an absolute wizard. And after the game, he was talking about potential retirement. And I think that sent Astros fans into more of a panic than anything because his heir apparent is with A.J. Hinch in Detroit. I think they're going to have a good game plan. If they feel like the fastball is going to go, they're going to go with it. And, you know, Maldonado, when we talked about the bats, he's clearly the worst hitter in the lineup by miles and miles. He's the worst hitter, but he's so great behind the plate that they're going to come with a good game plan. And, you know, whatever they think is going to work the best, they're definitely going to go with.
All right, Joe, and just before we let you go, this is kind of a loaded question, but what do the people in Houston think of Nick Caserio?
Not a fan. Not great. It's tough, man. The Texans are, I look at this team and I say, what are you doing with this franchise? I think you got to attack you know, the younger players, and they went with a bunch of 1 or 2 year contracts for veteran players. They've played okay so far. It sounds like Tyrod Taylor is going to be the QB1 again. But, man, they make decisions that I don't really understand. They traded a fifth-round pick for Anthony Miller from the Bears. They cut him because Danny Amendola is on the roster. And, like, if Nick Caserio wasn't the GM, Danny Amendola has no place on the Houston Texans when you're trying to build for the future. So, yeah, I don't think people are a huge Nick Caserio guy. Of course, people don't like Jack Easterby either. Because of, well, he's Jack Easterby. Like, no one really gets why he has whatever is vice president of football operations, but that's what they are. So I think people are a little concerned about what they're going to do, but the Caserio stuff is going to come down to when the legal stuff, you know, is aside for Deshaun Watson. You know, what are you going to get for him? Are you going to get lucky and, you know, are the Giants going to have 2 top 10 picks? Are the Eagles going to have 3 top 10 picks? And you're going to be able to flip Deshaun Watson to one of those teams and really build your core. I think that's when people really start, you know, judging Nick Caserio.
All right, that's Joe George from Sports Talk 790. He joined us on the Harbor One Hotline. Joe, thanks so much for the time, man. Enjoyed catching up and enjoyed getting an insight on this Astros team. Enjoy games 1 and 2 coming up on Friday and Saturday, man. Look out for our guys from EEI. They'll be there calling the game.
I definitely will. I'll be out there, I think, for game 2 for sure. So, and, Brian, I'm going to do something that I don't do often, but I'm going to give a shout-out. I got some family out in Boston. My cousin Mark and Todd, they're out there. They're big Red Sox fans. So my cousin Mark's been blowing me up. How are you rooting for the Astros and not the Red Sox? It's a betrayal of trust in the family, but it's going to be a good series. And, honestly, I think whichever team comes out of this series has a real good chance to win the World Series for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. That's Joe George. He joined us on the Harbor One Hotline from Sports Talk 790. Great stuff from Joe, previewing the series coming up. It is an interesting dynamic, and I was just thinking about it as he was chatting about Brett Strom, who's an outstanding pitching coach. I mean, he basically, remember, Garrett Cole was good in Pittsburgh, way better. Justin Verlander, remember, when he was originally traded from Detroit to Houston, it was when you still had the 2 trading deadlines. So he had to clear waivers to get to Houston, right? I mean, they gave up virtually nothing to get Justin Verlander, who became the most important pitcher in that particular postseason. And it's all because of Brett Strom. Look at the way that he's developed a guy like Lance McCullers. And think about what that staff had. They had A.J. Hinch as the manager, who was very good tactically. They had Alex Cora as the bench coach and Brett Strom, who is arguably the best pitching coach in Major League Baseball. Just an incredibly stacked coaching staff, managerial staff, if you will, that they had there in Houston for a bunch of years. So you look at this thing, the biggest thing for me is, can they get to this Astros pitching staff? Urquidy pitched well against them. Garcia pitched well against them. Valdez pitched well against them. But you heard what Joe said. Those guys have been up and down at times this season. They were just up when they faced the Red Sox. So can they get to those starters? That's the thing. Because, you know, as well as Nate Eovaldi's pitched this season and as well as some of these guys, like as well as Erod pitched the other night, you still don't know what you're going to get him from him on an everyday basis. Hauk has pitched really good. We've seen what Pivetta's been able to do. But Pivetta was not great for the majority of this. Well, I should say he was good at the beginning. Then he wasn't good for a while, and then he started to turn it on late. And since he went into the bullpen, he's been really good. But what you know is you're going to have to score a lot of runs, and that means getting after these starting pitchers. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Joshua in Revere. What's up, Joshua?
Hey, so I'm calling to get your thoughts off of Cora. I think, honestly, my opinion is it's going to be a 4-3 game in the favor of the Red Sox.
In game one,
I think it's going to be the Red Sox. Honestly, they only need to win one game in Minute Maid.
I agree with you on that, Joshua, and I appreciate the call. I just don't think it's going to be 4-3. Now, I think Nathan Eovaldi is going to go out there and he's going to give you his 5 innings, but I just feel like whatever the over is for all these games, take the over, because this is going to be an absolute slugfest. The Astros, they rank in the top 5 in pretty much every statistical category, and we've seen the Red Sox as a team in the postseason. They're hitting .328 with a .919 OPS. So I believe it's going to go over. As great as your pitching is, these lineups are too good. I mean, we mentioned it with Joe. Think about the guys that are in this lineup for the Astros. Outside of Maldonado, who, of course, is as Joe mentioned, he's a good defensive catcher, and he works well with the pitching staff, of course. In fact, I heard Brett Strom after that game the other day say that he should be the MVP of the team. Obviously, we can disagree with that. But nonetheless, you think about the guys you have to deal with in this lineup. Brantley. He was 5th in baseball in hitting. He was 3rd in the American League. Gurriel, Joe mentioned he's hitting 7th. He hit .319 this season. He led the American League in hitting. Then you have a guy like Tucker, who's hitting 294 with 30 home runs. Alvarez, 277 and 877 OPS, 33 home runs. And then you have the guys that we remember, like Altuve, he's hitting 278. He's got 31 bombs. Bregman missed about 2 months with a quad strain, so he didn't have a great season, but he actually hit pretty well in that series against Chicago. He hit 375 with an 882 OPS. And then you start to think about Correa, who it seems like this guy has been built for the postseason over the past couple of years. And if you look at a guy like his numbers on the season, 279, 850, 26 home runs from the shortstop. I mean, those are the guys that you're dealing with in this lineup. And he just hit 385 with four RBIs in that series against the White Sox. I mean, it is just a devastating lineup. And I'm sure on the other side of that, Houston looks at the Red Sox in the same way. When you look at the lineup the Sox have now with Schwarber leading off, the way that Kike is going right now, Devers obviously the landmine in that lineup that you want to try to avoid. And the Astros did better than anybody in baseball this year, attacking Rafael Devers with fastballs. And then you go to Bogarts, and then Verdugo, and then JD's hitting sixth, and Renfro's hitting seventh. And then you get the catcher, whoever it is. It'll be Plawecki, of course, on Friday, because, of course, he catches Nate Eovaldi. And then in the nine hole, you got Christian Arroyo, who is now starting to hit the ball since he's come back, since being out for a while. And you had to play Jose Iglesias because he had to get into the tournament. So that's why I'm saying you take the over in all these games. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. So a certain media analyst called out Mac Jones. We'll get to it next here on WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We're right back to What You Want to Hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
All right, getting you ready for the ALCS, of course, getting you ready for the Patriots taking on the Cowboys on Sunday. It's going to be ugly if they lose that game. If you go to 2-4, you're in real trouble. Like, this is a massive game, not just for Bill Belichick, but for Mac Jones, because he doesn't really have a signature win yet. Okay, you beat the Jets, and then last week you beat the Texans, a game that the Patriots almost lost. Mac needs to have that signature win, and I'm not telling you that he needs to do it immediately. Like, he's got a lot of years to do it. But they got to get a big win. They have not had a big win yet. The Texans, that's not a big win. The Jets, I'm sorry, that's not a big win. If anything, the win over the Texans is more relief than anything else. Their most impressive performance this year came in a loss against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's the only one that you look at, you say, yeah, they were impressive in that game. And they still had opportunities to win that thing. And I would argue that Belichick coached a poor game. Now, he had a great game plan defensively, but in terms of, why are you kicking that field goal? You're going to give Tom Brady the ball back even if you make it with a minute left and Tom Brady has 2 timeouts. Why are you punting at the end of the half when you have an opportunity to try to put points on the board? You give the ball back to Tom Brady there. So I felt Belichick was bad in that game, and that was their most impressive performance, a game that I thought technically the coach did a bad job in terms of the in-game decisions. Great game plan defensively. In-game decisions, not there. They have not had a complete game yet all season long. I think we can agree on that. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Paul in Westfield. Hey, Paul.
Well, other sports shows can't compare it, and it's time for Professor Barrett. 3 questions, Brian. First,
what's up, Paul? How are you?
That's awesome, bud. That's our hype intro. First question, curveball, and then 2 Red Sox questions. Curveball, saying Mac Jones hasn't had a complete game, true. Almost beating Tampa Bay by a field goal in the rain, true. However, is it more true to say that it's an 80-20 factor? 80% of it is good and not on our quarterback's fault. As
yeah,
the reality
Paul,
is, defense
Paul.
Falls apart.
Yeah, Paul, I'm not saying that Mac Jones hasn't had a complete game. I've been impressed with the kid. I'm saying as a team, they haven't had a complete game yet. You know what I mean? Like that game against the Texans, that wasn't a complete game. The defense was atrocious in the first half, and the offense wasn't good either. And then even if you look at the Jets game, I didn't feel like the offense played well in that game. I felt that was more about the turnovers from Wilson just throwing you the ball four times. So I just feel like as a team, they have to put a full game together to be able to beat an offense like the Dallas Cowboys have.
Absolutely. And turnovers and fumbles and interceptions are definitely not allowed. So that's an important question. We're all concerned what you bring up. Everyone knows it's true that there's Sale and Rodriguez. Which one's going to show up? Is it fair to have some relief in the fact that Quick cut Cora, pulled Sale after that first inning? He recognizes symptomology if they're not there, and him pulling them can relax and facilitate my not too being worried about that. Yes or no?
Yeah, I'm worried about a Paul just because he threw another bullpen today, right? So what that tells me is he's still searching for something. They still haven't fixed whatever the mechanical issue is with Chris Sale because he's just way too hittable right now. His changeup's not working whatsoever. So if the changeup's not working, that means the slider's got to be great and the fastball's got to be consistent and he's got to be able to locate it. And the problem the past couple of outings, he's had no command. So I don't know what you're going to get from Chris Sale. I hope they went back to the lab and they found something. We've seen them do this with different pitchers this season. I mean, they changed what Hansel Robles was throwing. It's the same pitches. It's just the usage is different. So they figured it out with him. Remember earlier on in the season, they recreated whatever the hell Garrett Richards was throwing. He basically created new pitches on the fly. So I have faith the organization can find something. I just don't know if Chris Sale is going to be able to execute it. And maybe it's not going to be until 2022 when he's fully back from the Tommy John, so to speak.
Absolutely right. You did warn us statistically. It's hard to come back from Tommy John, and we're seeing it up and down. So the next question, at trade deadline, everyone was going nuts. We didn't get the first baseman. The Yankees outbid us. Chaim Bloom picked up crud. Well, in reality, he picked up a good reliever, a good lefty pitcher, and a good bat. All three for three worked out well. True or false?
I would say true, Paul. Definitely. And look, I love the Schwarber move. From the get-go, my issue with Bloom at the deadline was, hey, they need a reliever. And Robles was horrible in Minnesota. I give them credit. They saw something in him that clearly I didn't. I mean, they got him here, and he comes here, and he wasn't good the first couple of outings. Remember, he tried to start a brawl with the freaking Blue Jays, like his first performance here. And Big Fudge is a guy that had only thrown eight innings this season, but they've gotten both of them to work. And Big Fudge, we know what he is. He's a lefty specialist. He's been really good in that role. And Robles has been a revelation, the way that they've been able to get that guy to contribute. So, yeah, I would say Bloom at this point, yeah, he nailed the deadline. Not to mention he gave up nothing. He gave up Chavis for Big Fudge. He gave up their 18th prospect for Schwarber. He gave up nothing.
Yes, sir. He traded chump change for good and no derange. Okay, next question. Your buddy Joe George brought up an interesting factor that Houston dumped and lost to sweep by teams like the Orioles, the Crud teams. They shouldn't have lost to, and you said the correct right back, so did the Red Sox. It should be considered most likely that when you're a superior team, you tend to snooze and fall asleep and underestimate the Crud teams. These teams know what they're going into. Both offenses are hot. Don't expect them to sleep. Expect to have, you better have a hell of an offense because we know they can hit. However, their pitching is an oil leak, like you said. Do you think our offenses versus their oil leak pitching creates a dominant factor, and hopefully is Vegas wrong in picking the Astros as they were wrong in picking Tampa Bay?
I hope they're wrong, Paul, and I appreciate the call as always, my friend. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. Now, the thing with the Red Sox, if they're going to win the series, the number is going to have to be very similar to what they put up against the Rays, which were stunning, right? 328, 919 OPS. They hit a ton of home runs. Kike Hernandez. Think about this from the Red Sox perspective. In this postseason, so it counts the Yankees game as well, they have seven different players that have hit home runs. They've got 11 in the postseason. They've got four guys that have hit two home runs, Bogarts, Schwarber, Devers, and Kike Hernandez. The only guys that have started games for the Red Sox in the postseason that are without a home run are Kevin Plawecki, that you never expect to hit a home run, Bobby Dalbec, who started two games and then JD was back, so Schwarber went to first base, and Bobby Dalbec has struggled over the past couple of weeks, and Hunter Renfro, who hit north of 30 home runs during the season. That's the only one that you're like, how did he not hit a home run if everybody else hit a home run? That's the only one that is stunning where it's like, yeah, if everybody's hitting home runs, Hunter Renfro didn't hit a home run. It's just kind of weird. But anyway, just getting back to the original point, this team's going to have to put up a similar number on a nightly basis to be able to compete with the Astros. Because even if you get a couple of good performances, like say Nate is typical Nate tomorrow, and say either one of Erod or Sale gives you a really good performance, whether it's game two or game three. Well, there are going to be games where your starters get beat up. That's just the reality of the team that you're going up against. They're going to get to your starters. They're going to get to your bullpen at times. So you have to keep up from an offensive perspective. Really, the formula is your starters need to steal two games, and then the rest have to be on that offense. That offense has got to be able to carry you. And not to say like you can win a game 1-0 if your starter goes really well in that particular outing, but you need your starter to steal two games, your starters, whether it be Evaldi steals two, and then you got to rely on your offense to win the other two. Oh, by the way, I want to switch gears to the Patriots for a second here. So how about this? Rex Ryan is not a big Mac Jones fan, apparently.
Are the Patriots a playoff team? Go.
Not no, but hell no.
Hell no, Rex.
Hell no. Say what you just because you got a pea shooter at quarterback, give me a break right here. This team should have been beat by the Houston Texans right now. Now, a playoff team? Playoffs? No chance in this thing. Look, their defense is not as good as they've been. There's another one that should have been picked up. Hey, the ball travels down the field more than 15 yards. Uh-oh, that's bad news for this guy right here. He reminds me he's closer to Danny Warfel than he is Tom Brady.
Whoa.
Watch out! Watch out!
I mean, that's a little ridiculous to compare him to Danny Warfel. I mean, Mac Jones is clearly an NFL quarterback and clearly a starter in this league for the next decade or so, right? I mean, at worst, he's going to have a career in the NFL. Danny Warfel didn't. Mac Jones has a way better arm than Danny Warfel ever did. I mean, that's a ridiculous comparison. Actually, by the way, and I'm not comparing the players, but you know that Mac Jones has more completions over 20 yards this season than Pat Mahomes? Now, obviously, a lot of that is because of the way that teams are playing the Chiefs defensively, where they're just saying, hey, take everything underneath. We're not going to get beat over the top. So that's how teams are playing them defensively. That's been the formula. But to make that sort of judgment on Mac Jones after, what, five games into his NFL career to say he's Danny Warfel, I mean, that's a little ridiculous. And think about the extremes we're talking about. We're talking about Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback to ever live, and a complete bust in Danny Warfel. Like, there's got to be some level of in-between. Like, wouldn't you settle for, if they can get the roster into a better position, like a Matt Ryan-level guy? Matt Ryan's never had the strongest arm. Matt Ryan's never been a great athlete. Now, when things were set up for him in his MVP season in 16, he had Julio. He had a great play caller in Kyle Shanahan, and things kind of added up. Like, I don't think Mac Jones is ever going to crack the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. I just don't think he's as talented as those other guys, right? Like, Justin Herbert may be in the top five right now. In fact, you could argue him and Tom Brady are the two front runners, and Kyler Murray. Those would be the three front runners right now for the MVP. I don't think he ever gets in that class, right? He doesn't have the arm that Herbert has. He doesn't have the quick twitch that Herbert has, but he anticipates things well. And I, quite frankly, this is something that disturbs me about the Patriots. They are not set up right now for a rookie quarterback, which is something that we never thought we'd say about the Patriots, right? We see it all the time with other organizations like the Jets and the Jaguars. And I'm not just talking about Wilson and Lawrence right now. I'm talking about guys through the years, the Geno Smiths, and not that Blake Bortles is ever going to be good, but Blake Bortles, the Mark Sanchez's of the world. We've seen these guys go to bad franchises, and they're not set up to succeed. I would argue right now, Mac Jones is not set up to succeed. He doesn't have a lot of weapons. Geno Smith has been bad. Remember, that was supposed to be the guy that was supposed to go from, okay, he was the third option in Tennessee, or really the fourth option in Tennessee after, of course, you had A.J. Brown, you had Corey Davis last year, and Derrick Henry out of the backfield. He was their fourth option. Well, they were projecting he was going to be better here. Well, he drops the ball like crazy. He fumbles the ball. He's not consistent. And I think what we saw last week is they're catering the offense more towards Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry doesn't have near the upside from an athletic standpoint that Jonnu Smith does, but he's more consistent. He was a leading receiver for this team last week. But think about that. That's your best weapon right now. I guess you could throw Jacoby Myers into the conversation. So he doesn't have great weapons. His offensive line was supposed to be a strength, and maybe when you get Trent Brown back, it will be. But the offensive line has not protected him whatsoever, and I would argue that the play calling has not been great. Where are the easy opportunities for Mac Jones? And you tell me, well, he's not throwing the ball deep, but where are the easy gains, right? I think about all the opportunities that guys in Kyle Shanahan's offense have, or guys in the years. Remember, Jared Goff put up insane numbers because of Sean McVay. Where is that easy stuff with Josh McDaniels and this Patriots offense? And not to mention the fact they were supposed to have a great running game, right? Well, that hasn't been the case through the first, what, five games of the season. All right, 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. I want to get to an interesting comment Josh McDaniels had about Mac Jones. We'll do that next here on WEI.
We're right back to it. This is Brian Barrett on EEI.
know, kind of going back to the beginning of this conversation about Mac saying he let them touch the ball too much. When he has some throws like that, does that change how you call a game? Like, hey, we got to dial it back a little bit to sort of maybe get his feet back under him? Or are you still, hey, you're here, you're good enough, we're going to keep doing what we do, just do it better?
Yeah, I do not lose confidence in him. I think he's demonstrated already, you know, in a short time that, you know, he's able to do the things we're asking him to do. And he's generally protected the ball. He's generally found the open player and thrown him the ball accurately and given us a chance to move the ball in the passing game. So, again, I just go back to any young player, you just try to use those as teachable moments.
All right, that's Josh McDaniels on his quarterback, of course, Mac Jones. How do you think Mac will perform Sunday against the Cowboys? 617-779-7937. I look at this game and I really do feel like, and I know this is going to sound hyperbolic to say, but the Patriots have put themselves in a position where Sunday's essentially the season. It really is, if you think about it. If you want to get into the postseason or at least compete down the stretch of the season where you're in a position to say, okay, we got a chance at one of the wild card spots, because remember, they still haven't even played the Bills yet, which is a scary thought, right? But because they lost that game to the Dolphins to open up the season when Damian Harris fumbled and the defense couldn't get a stop to get Mac the ball back at the end of the game there, because essentially they were a complete no-show against the New Orleans Saints. Remember, that was the game where Jonnu Smith caught a ball and just basically threw it up in the air, and Malcolm Jenkins came back for it. He ran it the other way for a pick six. And we've seen that New Orleans team is, quite frankly, not that good. I mean, when they win games, it's stuff like that that happens. I mean, they win in week one somehow against the Packers. I still don't know how the hell they do it. Aaron Rodgers is horrible in that particular game. But you get the point, right? The Patriots had two games at the beginning of the season. If they just win one of those, they're in a much better position. Say they lose to the Dolphins in that brutal game, but they come back and they beat the Saints, or vice versa. If they had beat the Dolphins and they just had no shot against the Saints because they were looking ahead to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which, quite frankly, I can't really justify, because you're not good enough to have trap games, if you will. You're sitting at 2-3 right now. But because the Patriots are sitting at 2-3, you need to win this game on Sunday to get back to 500. And then you actually do legitimately have a shot, right? And I know it's going to take a lot to be able to compete down the stretch of the season. But you think about what comes your way after this Cowboys game is the Jets. And I know the Jets won their one game. Believe me, I remember it. I lost my survivor pool. I was on the Titans in that particular game. I'm out of my survivor pool in, like, what was that, week three? But anyway, or week four, the Jets get their one win that they needed to get. The Patriots should win that game handily. And the problem is, if you don't beat the Cowboys and then you beat the Jets, okay, well, you're still in a situation where you're looking up in terms of trying to get back to 500. And then the week after that, on Halloween, you go on the road and you play the Chargers. So that's why this week is so imperative to get a win that almost, like, and I know it's not college football, but you want that signature win. That's what you want if you're the Patriots. You want to prove, okay, we are good. Because right now, this, let's be real, this looks like a 2-3 football team. They could have easily lost that game to the Texans last week, where they were horrible in the first half. In fact, they were bad to begin the third quarter. They started that third quarter off, what were they, down 22-9. Before they came back, and you could look at some of the decisions that David Culley made in that particular game and blame him for the Texans' loss, right? I mean, kind of some mind-numbing decisions that he made on the other side of things to do the Patriots a favor, if you will. So just when you look at it, if you can get this one game against a good Dallas team, a Dallas team that is 4-1, they had the Buccaneers on the ropes, they easily could have won that game. If you can pick up a win over this Dallas team, well, then you're feeling like, okay, we're going to be competitive the rest of the season. If not, you're going to be in a position where you have no chance at the postseason. And this is even going to be more difficult for Bill than it was last year, right? Because at least last year, we even convinced ourselves down the stretch, not that we thought it was going to happen, but as late as what, like week 12 in the season, we thought there was a chance that the Patriots could get into the postseason. Remember, we're doing all this, like, you need this team to lose and you need that team to lose and you need to beat this team. It never really mattered because the Patriots didn't do that. Remember, they got their ass kicked by the Rams on Thursday Night Football. So it never actually came to that point. But we were doing that late in the season, like week 13, week 14. With this Patriots team, you drop to 2-4 with the schedule that they have coming up. They have no chance at making it into the postseason whatsoever. So that's the troublesome thing to me, is you go up against a Dallas team that has one of the best offenses in the NFL. Dak Prescott's playing as well as he's ever played. And their defense, and I know that some of the numbers are not great in terms of the total yards and the passing defense and all that, but the one thing they do is they turn you over. I mean, you got Diggs out there that's got, what, 6 interceptions already this season. And that's a scary thing, because I would say Mac Jones, as of late, you look at the game against Tampa and you look at the game against the Texans, he's lucky that he didn't have more turnovers in those games. So that would be my concern going forward if I'm the Patriots, is in a game that Mac Jones is going to have to not turn the football over, you're going up against a team that feasts on that stuff, especially with Diggs back there. So Belichick pulls this one off on Sunday, then I would convince myself to get back on board and say, okay, they get a chance at the playoffs. But until they prove that they can beat a good team, why would anyone buy into their opportunity to make a run late in the season? I just don't see it right now with the way that this team has played and the careless penalties and the dumb mistakes. All right, thanks to Justin for producing. We're back with you tomorrow after Tom Brady takes on the Eagles. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.